Just a very short question. Why is the UK written media, both print and online, so partisan when all the evidence is that the public demand is not for that, but is for concise but unbiased news, and when in some other countries at least, that is what they get from most newspapers?
That's a very good question.
Yes, hi, my name is Maurizio Navid, I'm an occasional journalist, and I would like to thank the panel, because I was expecting some kind of another meaningless anti-Trump fest. This is much better. You understand
well.
About the problem of the attacks, you understand the bubble and everything else. I wanted to just point to the problem of the fact that the news media is a business, and Trump sells mostly to people that hate Trump, like happened, you know, to Howard Stern in the past. People want to read what Trump has done wrong. Today, in the email newsletter of the Washington Post, the first 21 non-sport news are against Trump, 21 out of 24. Sees Trump everywhere. And so this is the problem of the clickbait. For example, yesterday, the Independent covered the Supreme Court decision as the Supreme Court derails the Theresa May's plans. I was at home stuck with that derailed train, and I saw what Southeastern was doing. I saw what the government was doing, and that wasn't the same. That wasn't a derail. But I understand that, you know. So maybe the problem is not with journalists. The problem is with the editors, with marketers, yes, with the proprietors, people that want to sell this stuff, and they go for the penny news.
I think people are talking a lot about fake news, but like there was a study that came out recently that even the mainstream media journalism that we call it tries to often, like especially the tabloids, they try to spin it as tiny bits of fake news, so like, you know, tiny exaggeration. So I think for all the hand-wringing that we're doing, the mainstream media does undermine itself often.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, and one thing I think we can all agree on vis-a-vis what you said is that Trump has been extraordinarily good business for the media and for discussions about the media as well. So, we've only got 5 minutes. If you just briefly want to pick up on any of that and perhaps a last word, should we start, Alex?
Sure. I think the clickbait, you know, it's the voracious demand for Trump-related content, it, like, pleases me, I guess, as a Trump partisan, but depresses me as an American, that we spent so much time on this stupid, you know, the length and girth of Trump's, you know, crowd, extending to the Washington Monument. It was at his behest that we did it, but there's just so much policy stuff that is, you know, increasingly difficult to find the funds to hire experts to cover, and I think you just don't see as much good, solid analysis of policy, I think, as you did in prior years. It's an economic challenge, and it's a challenge that hopefully some maybe alternative media sources, the blogs, others that have policy expertise can fill the void. But I do think it's a real serious problem with journalism, and it makes me sad.
I thought Mark asked a very interesting question, which is why is the UK written press so partisan? I'm not a historian of the press, so I can't really answer that for the past. I mean, it's to do with the sort of fairly boisterous British culture, I suspect. But what I think is interesting about that is that what seems to be happening now, I think, as the media moves increasingly online, is that that partisan style of media has spread to America. I think that's probably now going to be the universal media style, and I expect it'll happen in Europe too in the forthcoming elections. I think the online media in Britain is strongly partisan. The Independent has always been it was founded as a centrist paper of no political party, but it is now very clearly on the liberal left of the spectrum. And has become possibly more so as it's gone online, because that's where our readers are driving us. I mean, I think, you know, the press is the way it is because that's what sells newspapers, and online media are the way they are because that's what gets the clicks.
Yeah. Anne.
I think that's true. I would just like, let's just take a slightly wider lens when we talk about things being sort of partisan, with a suggestion that disgracefully partisan, Grub Street brilliantly covered by Alexander Pope as bedlam of everyone shouting at each other from and not listening to each other and making up stories. There must be a sort of letter to Dr. Arbuthnot about fake news. In fact, there kind of is. It just was called something else. 19th century American journalism. Let me give you Victoria Woodruff, first woman, not first woman, because of lots of others who had a little go, but she had a really quite serious go to a woman to run for the presidency. She was a great suffragette. She did lots of very cool things. Unfortunately, she also ran the most appalling scandal sheets and ended up in prison.
They were
absolutely a role model for the tabloid editor of today. She did a lot of great stuff. She tore down, she was an early sort of trust buster. She tore down a lot of corrupt crony capitalism, but she went a bit too far. She got it a bit wrong, and there you are. So I'm just pointing out that sort of the press sort of going over the top is, on the whole, in the scheme of things, quite a good thing. And the attempt to come up with the fantasy anodyne newspaper, which somehow is produced by human beings but doesn't accept that people have viewpoints, they have ways of looking at the world, that is, it is not the same as bias, but there is, there's a good phrase in economics, I have a bias, that. I think it's a great phrase. I think, one thing about economists are clear about, that you actually say, this is where I come from. And when I entertain the other argument, I'm being honest with you about where I come from. I think if we continue, whether we're looking for clicks or we're trying to keep written products in the press alive, whether we're global or national, that is the way to do it, is to be honest about what you're doing with the readers. And I'm not so bothered if they are raucous, if some people don't like them, and if some other people on occasions shout fake news when they really mean I don't agree with you. But if we are clear with ourselves about what we're doing and tell the readers, we will be in a stronger moral position.
Excellent. James, last word to philosophy.
I'll kick off very quickly just by saying I'm feeling slightly guilty over my caricature last time. Anne was making a much better point than my caricature of it.
Buying the drinks.
Of course. So, dot-coms, we've got the VC money.
Keep it rolling.
So, essentially, there is a fatal mistake that any newspaper editor or publisher can make, and it's believing people when they tell you what they want to read. If you ask people, it's less features, less gossip, less celebrity. We want more serious things really laid out clearly, and we want some depth. Look at the most read lists, look at the most shared lists. It's never that. We all know what we tell people we read, and that's probably about 20-30% of what we actually read, right? Mm-hmm. So, I used to work at The Guardian, and during the lunch break, you would see Mail Online sidebar stories on almost every screen, I promise you. I think it's easy to say that we want it, but it's often kind of the vegetables of the media diet. On just a broad point, since I'm sort of talking roughly last, I will say, we have a lot of things in the media where we're trying to be objective, we're trying to be fair, we're trying to sort of work in a certain way. I think we're in for an uncomfortable few years for a lot of reasons. I think what we're going to have to do a lot of is try and separate what we do through habit and norm and what we do through principle, and try and ditch a lot of the former and keep the latter. I really hope I got that the right way around. we can't business as usual this entirely, I don't think. But it doesn't mean that we throw everything out. But it's going to be interesting trying to thrash it out and find what works, what doesn't, and what to keep. But we're going to have to not just keep on keeping on.
Thank you, James. We're going to have to wrap it there, but I don't know about you guys, but I thought that was incredibly, complicated, but wonderful. If you're quick, there are some drinks outside as well where we can continue the conversation. Thanks for coming tonight.
Stop.
Just before you all get up, I'm chairman of London Press Club, the aforementioned chairman of London Press Club, and this is just a word to all of you here could belong to the Press Club, and never has it been so important to actually have a united press. We disagree amongst ourselves, but we agree on the freedom of the press, and this is what the club stands for and does, and we have various debates. Go to the website, londonpressclub.co.uk. Thank you, Charlie. This is the second time we've joined with the LSE, a similar one a year ago, and it was another major issue. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you for this arena today and for chairing the panel. And on the drinks, one of the big things that was argued last night when the newspapers and the press and journalism was under threat, that newspaper groups still invest in journalism. And it was actually said that the online, looking down the other end of that table, were not necessarily investing in journalism. And to prove the point, tonight, the Independent and the Evening Standard, which is my day job, we're investing in half the drinks outside. So